Hi, everybody. Welcome to Creating the Future's board and community meeting and whomever meeting for May of 2019. I am Hilda Gottlieb with Creating the Future and excited that everybody is here today. We are missing several people who have been so involved in the conversation, missing Carl Wilding, missing Boulay, missing Ifeoma Eduba, missing several other people who have been actively involved in this conversation, but so happy that everybody is here who is here. If you are watching this live, please tweet and participate. The hashtag is Creating the Future. Please make sure to spell it right. And please, if you are watching and want to participate, use Twitter, because we're not watching any of the comments in the blog or anywhere else. So let's go around. If everybody will say who you are, where you are, and let's share something that has been awesome with you. Who wants to dive in first?
I'll go first. Hi, I'm Angie Ackerberry in Omaha, Nebraska right now, and it's very lovely weather outside today, and my awesome is that I got to spend last week with Hildy in Indianapolis, where we were doing some work with ARNOVA, or the Association for Research on Nonprofit Organizations and Voluntary Action. A long name, to talk about ARNOVA's future and hopefully some opportunities to keep collaborating also in the future with Creating the Future. It was really awesome. There was a lot of adventure, a lot of ups and downs, and ultimately we had a good, I think, result.
It was awesome. That was really awesome.
I'll go next. Justin Pollock in Washington, D.C., where it is rainy. My awesome is I got all the mulch done in the yard. Not after much weeding, because I hadn't gotten my mulch done.
Right, so, exactly.
That vicious cycle. So now I get to walk around the house, sit in the yard, and have that moment where everything just looks so spectacular when it's freshly curated and mulched to last for probably about a week.
It's okay. That is probably a great metaphor for life. Everything is order and in order until it's not. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Clearly your spring is a lot further advanced than mine. It's 4 degrees here at the moment Celsius and miserable. So the garden's looking green, but it's too muddy to work in. My awesome is that I have finally learned how to market my consulting practice. I have learned that the way to market my consulting practice is to tell people I'm moving into retirement and won't be available, after which everyone wants to send me work.
You should have thought of this when you were 23.
Apparently. So I am currently going out of my mind as a part-time, and you know what that means, interim CEO of a nonprofit with a lot of work needed to have a fit for a new CEO to come in. Plus work for two former clients and probable work for two new clients. Everybody wants it done at once. I'm a bit distracted, to put it mildly.
Definitely awesome.
That's my school dance analogy. You know, you go to school dance, the pretty girl you want to dance with, as long as you want to dance with her, it'll never happen. As soon as you say it'll never happen and you start to walk away, all of a sudden, hey, everybody wants to dance with you. So sort of the same thing is happening to you, Jane. I guess since I started talking, I will announce that I am Demetra Petropoulos. I am in Tucson, Arizona. And it is absolutely beautiful here. My awesome this morning is that I went for an early morning bike ride. It had been raining the last couple of days, which is a little unusual for us this time of year. The whole last year has been unusual in terms of the amount of rain we've gotten. And it was just wonderful. The air is very rich and thick, and it's usually not bad. So it was both cool and just refreshing. So it's my awesome today.
Pretty cool. And I want to remind you, Dimitri, that your name still says Creating the Future, and that you need to speak up, because we are sharing a microphone so that that guy over there doesn't reverberate with with mine.
That was behind the curtain.
I am Hilda Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and I also am in Tucson, Arizona, right next to this guy, where it is truly beautiful. We had a beautiful rainstorm yesterday, unexpected, and what that did was there's a nearby national park that is just absolutely gorgeous, all hiking up into the desert along streams and things, and the saguaros are in bloom. And so for those who don't, the saguaros are the ones that you see in the cartoons, the cactus that look like this. And when they bloom, they get big white flowers at the ends of each of their arms. And so it'll be a crown of flowers on the ends. And because it had rained, nobody was out there. All the tourists said, oh no, it's raining, we can't go. And so it was just beautiful, beautiful. But my awesome, I have so many at this point that I can't even count. Being with you, Angie, and the whole board and team from Arnova last week was amazing. Really, really, really wonderful. And the thought that the work that we're starting to explore regarding capacity building and the field of capacity building overall, and what an integral part you all are at the core of that, that was just so exciting. It was also very exciting to be in Indianapolis. It's really nice. I had absolutely no expectations. I had never heard anything about the city. And it was wonderful. It's a wonderful walking city. It's clean and beautiful, at least the downtown areas that I got to see. And so that was pretty awesome. And I guess the next awesome is that we will, I was going to say, the next awesome is we won't be having a meeting in June. That's not the awesome part, because I love our meetings. But the reason we will not be meeting in June is that about less than a month ago, maybe just about a month ago, we got an inquiry asking if I would keynote a conference in Milan the first week in June. And very out of the blue, very last minute, only a little bit less than 2 months' notice. And so we gathered up all of our airline miles, and Dimitri will be joining me. And so I have never been to Italy. I don't think Dimitri's ever been to Italy. And so we'll get to spend at least a little bit of time in Northern Italy, and we're very excited about that. So, and very excited about the group, the group that I'll be working with, and I'll talk more about that next time because I don't want to spend too much time. But I love when someone makes me think of something that I never thought of, and their mission is all around making supporting organizations that deal with patients with skin diseases and the kinds of things you would never think of, like, okay, why skin diseases and skin, you know, the stigma that comes when you see somebody with a splotchy face, the alienation and loneliness that comes from those kinds of things, all of the various issues that happen when we think of it as just skin, and not realizing that, you know, the skin is the largest organ in the body, and how we react to each other when we see skin things. And I can't wait to talk to them. I'm now really, really excited about it. It's just, I love when somebody opens my brain and says, here's something you never saw. It was standing right in front of you. You never saw it, and you never saw it in this way. So it's going to be pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. I am glad you're back, Jane.
Just sending you a note that, again, I've had to switch to the laptop. There's still, and this is the third Zoom problem I've had this month. They're not keeping up with Apple iOS.
That's they're You know, we love you, Zoom. Keep making it better, please.
Oh, I still keep recommending it to everybody.
Keep making it better. Keep making it better. When we last saw our hero and heroine, we have been working through in the, I don't know whether to say restructuring or structuring of Create in the Future. We've been working through what the role of the board will be if we are focused on compliance and meeting the expectations of people who have expectations of us. What is the role of a board when that is the role of the board? What does that mean the board does? What is the board thinking about? What is the board talking about? Who needs to be on that board? We had an amazing conversation last time that in my preparing the summary of that conversation, I got so energized re-listening to that board meeting. All of the ideas that popped and watching, you know, just like I just said, it's fun to sort of think about things in a new way, watching as each of us went, oh, it's that. So if you have not watched the prior board meeting, I recommend it. It is highly entertaining if you are an organizational geek like we are. And so where we started was where we start every conversation with catalytic thinking. We started by asking who would be affected, who has expectations of us. If we change to a compliance-focused board and a board focused on meeting the expectations of the world, who are those people in the world? And we listed quite a few of them. It really came down to those people to whom we are legally obligated, which is the state and the feds. And then everyone else whom we are choosing to be compliant with, to connect with, to meet their expectations. The people who are investing in the success of our mission in some way, whether they're participating in our programs, whether they're partners, whether they're donors, funders, volunteers, faculty, team, and go on and on and on. And so we spent a long time listing those people who will be impacted and listing what are their expectations. If we're going to meet their expectations, what are their expectations? And then last time when we got together, we talked about what meeting those expectations would make possible. And it really came down to four big chunks. One is very pragmatic. It frees us up. If the board is focused on meeting the expectations, meeting compliance issues, it frees up everybody else to just focus on the mission. It is a precursor to deep engagement. If we are meeting everybody's expectations, then there's engagement that's happening along the way. Part of those expectations are that we will engage. That leads to the third one, which is that we would be modeling what it looks like to walk our talk. And then lastly, the excitement that focusing on compliance actually allows us to democratize the board, that anyone could be a board member. Because they don't have to be an expert in personnel. They just need to know what the expectations are and to be able to say, we've met those expectations, and to have confidence that we've met those expectations. And so if that is what having a compliance-focused board makes possible, we're going to start asking, what are our conditions for success? If people who are... Especially, you know, I think we can sort of say that what the IRS and the state expect from us is that we tick the boxes, is that we, you know, we fill out the forms, that we're legal, that we not do anything illegal. I think the meeting those expectations, you can have a board that meets once a year, sends stuff off to audit, and you're done. Looks at the 990, says, oh, that's nice. The big one, though, is meeting the expectations and complying with the expectations of everybody else. And so if the result we want is really that we are showing what's possible, walking our talk, engaging people, which is walking our talk, making participation on the board as democratic and open and participatory as possible, which is walking our talk, all of it, really showing what is possible. And that what that makes possible is that people believe that they can walk their talk. We talked so much last time about what it looks like in organizations that don't walk their talk. What do all of the people who are investing their time and their talents and their resources, their focus, their attention, what must they be assured of? What must they, because that really is what the expectations are all about, what must they be able to count on from us? As I listened, I was struck in the walking the talk theme of all of it, that it felt like it was about people being able to count on us for whatever they need to count on us for, versus lip service, because that was also what we talked about a lot. When people don't walk the talk, that talked about the domestic violence organization that the board was abusive to the staff. When you're not walking the talk and you're just giving lip service. So what do all of those people, our participants, our stakeholders of all kinds, what do they need to be able to count on? What do they need to be assured of?
So one of the things I'm working with a lot, so this is kind of self-serving observation because it's...
We're humans.
It's what I'm trying to get more organizations to do. So I'm calling it sort of this awareness of the design capacity of an organization, which encapsulates all of the core thinking and promises that we're sort of making, which is... what do we value? So we have to be clear to express what we value so people know what to expect us to value. We need to be able to articulate the assumptions that we are holding and the beliefs that we basically are designing the organization around. What are those, you know, sort of what's our worldview, and how well can we describe it? And then also embedded in that is what's our theory of change? And so that theory of change clearly articulates the outcomes that the organization is trying to advance. And then the broad sort of methodology, which is really the sort of what catalytic thinking would lead you to understand, which is what does it take to create that outcome? And then in what way do we move those gears as an organization? So again, we don't need to know how all that stuff works, but we need to know what that design construct is for the organization, so that then we have clarity as to what we're actually asking questions about. So, I mean, you mentioned, Hilde, that, you know, the IRS, they just want us to check the box, but there's a really important thing, which is, one of those boxes is there's a paragraph in the code that says your organization must do this in one of these things in the community. Well, as a compliance board, we would have to know what of those things do we do and in what way do we do it? And so here's the Justin commentary that always comes along with this. Most board members don't know that design capacity. They don't know where to find it. Mm. It's in someone's head. It's never talked about. But it is, I mean, for the purposes of this in particular, it is the basis of all decision making.
Yep. So what would the people out in the world to whom we are holding ourselves accountable need to be assured of in that?
If I can comment, they became our stakeholders for their own reasons. Mm-hmm. To understand what their reasons were for being a stakeholder with us. Who cares whether or not we've achieved what we said we were going to achieve? The accountability to them is that they got what they wanted from the relationship. And that means it'll vary with each and every one of them for why they chose to be connected with us.
Yep, you started to answer my follow-up question. So if what they need to be assured of is that they get what they want from the relationship, what does it take for them to get what they want from the relationship? If that is the expectation that we are meeting, what needs to be in place for them? And you started to say, we need to know what they want.
Yeah, presumably they want outcomes. They don't need all sorts of input-output type data except to back up the outcomes, and possibly none at all given the nature of this work. But if they specifically funded that we have a presence at a conference in Milan, they'd like to know what happened, that you didn't take the money and go to Greece instead.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Says the Greek.
Yeah, just picking at random. You actually did go. You gave the presentation. There were people in the room. It would be nice to know what sort of reaction you got from the people in the room, what kind of questions they asked. But it has to fit each situation, not be cookie cutter. Not be the kind of thing I'm looking at in my interim role where I have a ton of different grant requirements. Every single one of them wants a different format, but a detailed accounting and who came to the workshops and all that stuff, which actually doesn't tell them very much about what they got.
Right.
What they're trying to do as a foundation is fulfill their own mission. Some of them aren't as good at asking that question as others. So we may have to help them know what they want. And please don't put 40-page agreements in place with every one of them.
What would assure people that we are, in fact, walking our talk? What would they need to see? What would they need to feel? What would they need to... No. What would assure them that we are in fact walking our talk?
The thing that I've been ruminating is really basic communication, to know that they're heard and to, you know, have it be two-way in that. So how would they know that we're walking a talk is they have to there has to be communication that that's going on, which addresses what Jane was talking about. You know, that it has to fit their situation, but how do they know it's fitting their situation if there isn't, you know, the real basic two-way channel that's going on between, you know, the entity and the stakeholder?
Yes. I think adding to that, too, that they want to know what's going on, or that two-way between the board and participants, but also I think they want to know that the board knows what's going on, right? Like they're confident in what, that we know what's going on, that we are kind of paying attention to what's going on and helping guide the organization based on that information. I'm thinking about our discussions last week, you know, with the Arnova board, and like there was a big theme there about like not everybody always knows what's going on and how do we create, you know, ways to enable that without overwhelming people.
That is tremendous. I and the thought that's going through my mind, Angie, as you're saying that, is the line we hear when things mess up, which is always the exact same line. Where was the board? So what would it take for people to have confidence that the board knows what's going on? First, I guess the board would need to know what's going on.
Yes.
Go ahead, Justin.
So here's the thing. It's secondary that the board knows what's going on. What's more important is the board knows why is going on. Because I think about Angie's point, which is, or even Jane, yours too, which is, it doesn't make sense for the board to know every activity that's going on, every program, every output, every result. What they need to know is, we have a training program based on what? Again, this is where I go to the design. What are the principles behind the training program and why we think it would be successful at doing, you know, or for Arnova, we have a conference model. Like what is the, I don't care how many people come. I don't care how much money we made. What's the premise of why a conference for Arnova? Like what's the relevance and the why about it? Then you can start to ask the, well, did it work questions, which are the efficacy questions. But we so often just say, well, what's going on? And no one has a context for knowing, is that working? And to your point of then they say, well, where was the board? Well, the board was probably watching everything that was going on, but they had no idea that it was the wrong thing. hence a failure of compliance. But the compliance is with the design principles, not with legal obligations. It's compliance with the sort of esoteric intent of the organization.
Well, the values and assumptions that you started out talking about, you know, that's what underlies.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it from my perspective when I sat on boards, which is stop telling me about all the stuff we did. You are overwhelming me. Like, tell me how it worked, or, you know, the
what we learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What we learned. Are our assumptions true? Just what you're saying, Dimitri. Like, what was the assumption behind it? Was it true, or did it come out? Mm-hmm.
So what would it take for, I'm trying to think and write at the same time. This is, you guys got my brain going. So if the board is focusing on the why, if the board is asking questions where the why is the context, are we focusing on our values in action? Are our assumptions true? What are we learning? What would need to be in place for what would it take for any of our stakeholders, participants, donors, funders, partners, to feel confident that we are asking those questions and to feel confident in the process. They may not agree with the answers, but to feel confident in the process by which we are, that we're walking the talk to get to the answers. What would it take for them to feel confident in that?
Demonstrated inquiry.
Talk more. By whom? About what? What?
Well, so I think it's a communication. The by whom? By the people who are best positioned to answer the question. So I think. Well, just because I think, you know, we've talked about this idea that, if my question is the efficacy of a program design, I don't actually expect a board member to answer that. I would expect a participant to answer that. But what I need to see from the organization is, show me where the questions are being asked and how you are deliberating the answer. So, you know, share, and some of that is, can you share with me the basis of, again, I keep coming back because it's just the language I'm using. Show me the basis of the design. Now show me where you asked about whether the design worked and functioned. And then I'm going to make a judgment. Was that the right person to ask, you know, to make that assessment? That's there. But so I guess an analogy that comes into my head around this one is crisis management. When organizations say we can't say anything until we come with a strong position about what we're going to do, I'm like, well, No, people actually just want to know you're trying to figure out what to do. Like, you need to communicate to them, we found this problem. We don't understand it yet. We're trying to understand it and what actions we need to take. Here's what we're asking ourselves. We will tell you as we learn. And organizations won't do that. They say it shows weakness, but really what it does is it, you know, because that this void of nothing, I don't know if they're asking questions. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know, you know, who's in control or what the, yeah. So again, that's the crisis problem side of it, but we could do that on the proactive side, which is just demonstrating that, guess what? We ask questions. We don't just profess answers.
You know, one of the thoughts that struck in my mind is the idea of transparency, but also in terms of, you know, how much communication is going on with the organization. And by being transparent, you don't necessarily need to be, you know, necessarily responding to each question, but the question answers itself. That if they can see, you know, using, and this what sparked my thinking, Justin, was this crisis management thing. If I could see transparently what's going on, I don't have to ask you what's going on. You know, what are you doing? And so your energy isn't taken up by saying no comment or saying here's what we're doing or saying whatever, because they can see it. So I think it's really important that there be that opportunity for people to answer their own question, in essence, for the stakeholders to be able to see, you know, is their stake being held properly, you know, in terms of what the organization is doing.
That is the best thing that Creating the Future could do, is show how transparency means that there aren't any questions at the end. That we could be a wonderful role model for that. I think many progressive foundations might greatly appreciate that they don't have to wait and see if you've told them that, oh, we didn't quite do that, but we're hoping it's okay that we did this instead, which is a pretty frequent year-end comment, I gather.
Yeah.
The other thing, I apologize, I am getting urged. I've had like 4 urgent messages in the time we've been together already, so I've maybe missed something, but did we at some point say, let's ask them up front what questions they think they might have at the end?
No, talk more about that.
Well, if we know in advance how they perceive they would want to get accountability, it makes it a lot easier for us to make sure that we're prepared for it. Because, no, they won't sit through watching every board meeting, for example, whatever. But if we've said to them at the start, it's the same as with evaluation. How are we going to evaluate this program? Well, what did we say at the start of the program during the design phase that we were going to do for evaluation? Not at the end, this is how we're going to evaluate it. Oh shit, we didn't track that data.
Right.
Another kind of comment I think every grant maker has heard variations of is, oh, that isn't what we tracked. We didn't know that's what you wanted.
Yeah, I'm smiling inside at the simplicity of the way they are assured that they are getting the information they need is that we ask them what information do you need.
I also think that addresses the theory of change that you were talking about, just, you know, that that's up front. You know, this is what we're doing. You know, this is why, and the values of why and how we got them.
That might mean challenging them up front, because they might send the same bump they send to everybody they fund. And that means having real conversations up front about what do you really want.
Well, and what I'm sort of riffing off of that is that when we talk about our stakeholders in general, anybody who is investing their time, their talent, their focus, their attention, anybody who's watching our meetings, that I'm never asked by any organization that I give my time, my money to, et cetera, what do you want to know? I'm just thinking about, as a donor, getting a note that, you know, unless you are a major donor where you are considered worthy of having a real relationship and not just the money tree where you send your check every couple of months, how it would feel to be contacted, to be asked, what do you want to know about what we're doing? And to mean it. I mean, it seems so silly.
And if you have a lot of donors, you could ask some each year. Because to some extent, the major part is it worth tracking this separately in our accounting system? And if people say, yeah, if you want something with seven digits from me, it's worth tracking it separately in your accounting system, then you agree to that up front. Right. Most don't expect that. They don't expect customized information.
Well, they don't expect to be treated like a person who is valuable. Because we so often in all kinds of work, and businesses are the exact same thing. We treat people as if their value, their worth, has to do with how much money they provide. If you are a major client of a major corporation, you get treated different than somebody who goes to Target and buys your product. And so I think it's the same. I think it is, it's what does it mean to really be in relationship with people?
And if you're Target, you should be trying to find out from at least somewhere reasonable sample of why they pick you. You got lots of choices of where to buy that laundry hamper or that new set of towels. Why'd they pick you?
Yeah.
And anybody that's a stakeholder with any of our organizations had lots of choices about where they wanted a relationship. And they know inside why they picked. But it might have to be drawn out of them because they're not used to being asked.
And I'm sparking on the demonstration project we did with the Nevada Department of Education. Once they made the decision that they wanted to shift the culture of the organization, one of the things that we had a hand in shifting in terms of their approach was they were going to do a survey initially that was going to ask basically what's wrong with our culture. Mm. And, we were sitting in a meeting. It was sort of fun. We were sitting in a meeting and I was very quiet because I was the outsider. And, finally, Christy turned to me and said, "So Hildy, what do you think?" And I went, okay. There's two things wrong with this statement. One, what if we ask them what good looks like rather than asking them what's wrong? And two, what if they don't want to fill out a survey? So, you know, it's a matter of asking the questions again, Jane, asking, you know, what do you want to know? But also asking that question in a multiple different ways, because what they wound up doing was they did some surveys. They did some what they were calling huddles, where they brought people together, where you could talk quietly among four or five different people. They did what they called coffees with the chief, where you could actually sit down one-on-one with the superintendent of schools. They gave them a range of, so it's occurring to me that one of the things that would make me feel confident as a participant, as a donor, et cetera, is being treated authentically like a human being in a real relationship. Rather than being treated like whether it is a money tree if you're a donor or taking a class or whatever, but there's something about being treated like I'm in an authentic relationship and that I actually have a voice. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, Dimitri, that they feel seen, that they feel heard, and I think that there's something really powerful there.
I want to build on the what does good look like, because I have a quick little story. one of my new staff members in my interim CEO role went to a workshop on allyship. I don't know if that word is becoming common in the US, but it's becoming very common here.
Very much so.
So instead of starting out with who are you and why are you interested in allyship or what do you think allyship means to you or whatever, apparently the workshop facilitator and a group of people who are all strangers to each other said, we're going to start by going around the table, say your name and describe a conflict you've been in. How would you like that as a starting tone for a workshop on how to be allies with people who are being marginalized in our society?
Wow.
Luckily, the employee was a really good facilitator herself and recognized and told me about how bad a start that meant.
Have you all read, I'm proselytizing these days, The Culture Code? It is, the author studied for about 5 years what makes good groups highly effective. And he found three things, and the examples are amazing. The first is that people feel safe. The second is that is vulnerability, which comes with feeling safe. And the third is shared purpose. The purpose has the context of everything. There's so many examples he talks about, and I was thinking about when Justin and Dimitri, you were talking about what people are seeing from the outside, and Justin, you were talking about the risk management thing. He gives the Tylenol example, the poisoning of the Tylenol example, and talks about the fact that prior to that, Johnson & Johnson had gone through a 2 or so year period where they had this family values credo that was from the family. I mean, not its family values, but the family's values were part of their credo, and everybody was ignoring them. It was like, yeah, it's on the wall. And they went through a 2 year exercise, very much like what we did when we asked for a year, what do our values look like in action? And they kept going through the credo. Does it still apply? Et cetera, et cetera. And they were doing that internally within the corporation. And that's when the Tylenol thing hit. And that they instantly knew, in terms of risk management, answering all of your questions, Justin. We are inquiring. Here's who we're asking. Here's what we're going to do. And because our most important purpose is that families trust us and be okay, we are pulling every pill off every shelf everywhere.
They've been used as an ethics study
forever and ever. Exactly.
Ever since.
Exactly. But you know, looking at the backstory to it, there's what I kept thinking is, what does it take for that to be how people think of us? That they have confidence in that the board has a handle, rather than where was the board? And the word confidence keeps coming up for me. Mm-hmm. What does it take for all of our stakeholders to have confidence in us? What do they need to see? So Justin, I'm looking at the notes I scribbled on what you were calling the demonstrated inquiry. Show that we are inquiring, show who we are asking and who is answering, and show, you know, are they capable of answering? Show the questions that we asked and show the answers. What would it take to know that?
Well, I want to put one little caveat on that before we go to what, because of what you talked about with the example in Nevada. I'll be perfectly blatant. That's a stupid question. If you have to ask me what's wrong with the culture, then I mean, like, that just demonstrates that, like, you, what's wrong with the culture is you don't know what's wrong with the culture. So I think that there is a qualitative element that it's not just asking questions. It's not just any question, because again, James is talking about the funders that ask us all sorts of questions, you know, or ask questions. It is that qualitatively the question demonstrates an understanding of what's going on and a query. So, I mean, perhaps I'm a little harsh on that because there was generally a desire to understand what the culture was, but exactly to frame the question like that, tell us what's wrong with the culture, means I have no confidence in you as a human being because you cannot see what should be blatantly obvious as things that are wrong. Like, I shouldn't have to tell you that.
And by the way, the answers they got when they completely shifted the questions, when they turned the question into what would a good culture look like and feel like, what would you be seeing around here and et cetera,
yeah.
The stuff they got was awesome.
Yeah. All the stuff we're not seeing.
Well, they got stuff they could use instead of information they agree with, which is what you often get from surveys is, now we know a whole lot of what people don't like, but we have no idea what to do about it. Instead, by asking the question the positive way,
yes.
They could say, what do we need to do to make that happen? They already knew what they wanted.
Yeah.
And that became a tactics question instead of a,
I do also think there's a element, I mean, part of what I'm getting at is the empathy element. The question is not self-serving. The question is about the entity or about others. And in fact, even Jane, the example you gave of the allyship, while I don't necessarily agree with that, there also is an element, as I'm familiar with sort of that space, which is white people, you have no idea what the experience is of the people that you're trying to ally with. And that kind of question right on the spot says, everyone you want to be an ally with, when they walk into a room, they're being confronted with conflict just by culture definition. Now, I'm not saying there was that much intentionality or there's a danger to that way. I mean, it sparks all sorts of reaction that isn't healthy, but there is an element to it of saying, are the questions being answered or being asked? Questions which have a fundamental intentionality around feedback, understanding the assumptions, understanding what's going on with it. Again, I don't mean to go to say that what was done was right in such an example you gave, Jane, but I think
what you don't realize is most of the people in the workshop were not from the mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. The person I'm talking about was very much not from the mainstream culture. They were the people who had the conflicts routinely, but they didn't yet have a safe environment for sharing.
Right, exactly. Exactly. The question that's arising for me, Justin, in the question that you have been posing, and it gets back to asking them, is are the questions that we're asking the questions our peeps want to know? And because boards ask questions all the time. They ask ridiculous questions frequently, but and that gets to the fact that is it something I want to know? No. What do I want to know? You know, are the questions that we're asking the questions that people want to know?
So is it our role to help them frame the questions since we have more expertise generally at creating the future than the average organization is going to have in terms of people who really put professional development time and effort into learning more about asking questions.
Right. Right.
And then maybe I can send you the woman at my board who want out of a multi-million dollar budget, her big question at one meeting was, are you paying travel expenses for fundraising?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in the olden days, I used to love when everybody had to have a fax machine. And so, you know, I'm dating myself. But when board members of a $10 million organization would argue over where to buy the $200 fax machine.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a question that me as a donor that I care about? And what are the questions that our donors, our participants, our faculty, our all of our teams, our volunteers, is that the questions that they want to know?
You know, I'm glad you said that you were describing there, Hildy, the stakeholders in a very broad sense. because I think that sometimes that's part of the defining question is who's a stakeholder? Jane, you mentioned funders, or at least at some point, and clearly they, if someone is funding an organization, you feel like you're a stakeholder in the organization. But if this is a soup kitchen, the people eating soup are stakeholders. The volunteers are stakeholders. The building owner is a stakeholder. So I think there's different questions to look at the theory of change. How does that apply to different stakeholders and yet be true to the values and the assumptions and everything else that underlies who we are? The other thing that I was thinking about is, we've been playing with this idea of a spoken hub kind of entity where, the stakeholders at that point are the owner, your own organization is a stakeholder at that point, if you're looking at it that way. There's one of the hubs, one of the spokes, maybe a group of people who are doing something, whatever that is, under the C3 of creating the future, following kind of thinking, following whatever, but they're also a stakeholder too, because they accomplish what they're trying to accomplish because of all of this. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around the vastness of stakeholder in the context of what we're trying to do here. And I think it's wonderful, but I'm trying to think about it in that context. So I'm sort of asking a question, or at least trying to shed light on some of my dilemma here. In thinking about this,
what is a dilemma?
I'm sorry.
Why is that a dilemma as opposed to just part of what we have to do?
And dilemma may be a poor choice of words, and I'm famous for that.
Yes.
part of my thinking, I guess, is a better way of saying it. I don't have an answer yet, and I'm still formulating that. So that's how I describe it.
What I'm starting to picture is a cycle that the board will want to always be on, which is designing systems. Justin, you started with organizational design, designing systems that answer the questions we believe people want to know, our people want to know, in ways that they want to hear that. So it could be posted at the website, it could be tweeted, it could be, there's a million different things. It could be letters to them, I want to get it, okay, great. Designing systems, living in those systems, providing that information, asking, again, is this what you want to know? What do you want to know? How do you want to know it? Putting that into practice, showing it, finding the ways to do it, and asking that there's an ongoing loop of asking and answering the what do you want to know question, mm-hmm. not assuming what people's expectations are, but actually finding out.
I really like that you make it iterative, because for a lot of people, they work on the I'll know it when I see it way of living. So until they see one that you think answers the questions they thought they had up front, they won't know that something's missing. So it's not going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Their answers will change because of what was in the front page of their newspaper, the last issue they read raised this issue at some other organization, and that made them wonder about
right.
that issue at this organization.
Yeah.
I do that. Every time I read the paper, it sparks some new question in my mind of what's happening on some issue.
See, every time I read the paper, I get the same question. Aren't they kidding?
Really? How stupid do they think
question.
They are?
My question is usually, really? Dimitri, you started to say something.
Yeah. A couple of different things that have been mentioned that I was thinking about, and one of them you just talked about is the cyclical you know, where the process feeds itself or informs itself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you're constantly informing this process, which is informing the stakeholders, which is informing the process and continuing. The other thing that I was thinking about is and it was a comment about the title. That was, there was already a program that talked about values and family or whatever, and then a crisis occurred, and then it really brought it to light. And now, you know, there was in essence a cultural revolution that happened within the organization. And sort of it refreshed everything in terms of the way that they were thinking. So what that brought to mind is that I think there's a tendency in all of us. If I see the same thing over and over again, I walk by that poster in the lobby that says, you know, we're the greatest whatever, the 600th time I walk by it, I don't even see it anymore. And so the renewal thing I think is really important, is to constantly be refreshing this in, you know, the organization, the whatever, so that these questions aren't just asked once, I guess is what I'm saying. That there is an ability to think about this on a renewing basis, because it will change, and hopefully because it will motivate and inspire at the same time the answers.
And they may not have changed, but the life cycle of the organization has, so, or the life cycle of the program has, and our expectations differ of a program that's been being delivered for 3 years compared to a startup or 20 years.
Right. This is really exciting. I have to say that when we've been talking over the past couple of years about a compliance-based board, the long lists in my mind that I try and just get out of my mind of what do we need to comply with, what will it take to comply with those, what are the questions, and et cetera, they've been, and I'm reflecting back on Justin, your aha last time, that you were thinking that the board would need to be more and more professionalized. And the aha being, no, it's just the opposite. They don't need to be. That's where my brain was going also, is that we're going to need, you know, auditors and accountants and who want to be looking at as Rebecca used to say, the gnat's ass of everything. This again is the democratizing thing. No, what are the questions people really have? And including the IRS, and we're compliant. If we're, you know, the gnat's ass stuff is the IRS and the state. But the rest of it is, again, a really democratizing question. I mean, there's something just feels very big here.
What I'm getting out of this is that compliance may not be the right word.
No, it's definitely, we talked about that earlier.
I have the same issue of, I thought you were moving towards a very professionalized, specialized board of people who, the kind you'd have on an audit committee.
Right.
So this is more of an oversight board? Something.
We started playing with the words accountability and expectations. Mm-hmm. Whose expectations are we meeting? There's just something powerful in naming this as, in essence, what we're talking about here is having real relationships with people to whom we feel accountable.
Isn't that integrity? I mean, I think about this, it's an integrity board.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like that.
I mean, because that's what you're doing is, I mean, I, for me personally, when I say I have integrity, it's, I do what I say I am going to do. I deliver on what I commit to doing. And I do it, you know, both my own commitment to myself in terms of how I am going to do it, but also what it is that I do. And so I think I don't think it's accountability, because yeah. you can account a lot of things. Integrity has a qualitative component to it that says, you know, something only has integrity if it is true to something that was put before it.
Are we walking the talk?
Yeah.
That's perfect, Justin. It includes accountability, but isn't limiting.
Yeah. I mean, does this system have integrity? That goes back to your question, Dimitri. If you build a networked organization, then this integrity board is saying, how do we know that a spoke has integrity? What does it have integrity to? What does integrity look like for that spoke? So that then as the board, we don't have to be experts in that realm. But what we do demand is that there is a transparency on the design thinking and the implementation. Like, you need to tell us what integrity would look like in this situation so that we can make an assessment of whether, you know, integrity abounded.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Wow.
You know, when I think of integrity, Justin, versus accountability is kind of a binary thing in that, you know, you are, you're not. A situation comes up. Integrity is a new situation has arisen that there isn't a binary answer for. And this provides you the tools to come up with whatever the answer is. So it's a much more creative and much more, it's a broader way of dealing with the world than it is accountability, which is just, you know, we either do it or we don't. You know, we're accountable for this. What does that mean? It has very specific things that means. You know, we have integrity. Well, a customer walks into the store and they have a broken jar. You know, if I have integrity as a retailer, I empower my people to be able to handle that in the way they see fit. You know, accountability is that thing on the shelf or not? You know, is our stocking report accurate? Or, you know, so it creates a different environment that I think is much more humane. And much more real in terms of how people feel with each other.
It also makes it clear it's about people, or accountability gets seen as reports.
Yes, yes.
And reports aren't good enough.
And integrity speaks is a person word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a people word. People have integrity. I mean, you know, so do machines, but.
Well, doesn't integrity more clearly links to values in a way that,
yes.
And in fact, when we talk about accountability, we often think of it in terms of value-free in some ways, but integrity is infused with how are we upholding our values or living up to our values.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, going back to Jane's marketing your consulting practice, I'm not going to go around saying, hire me, I'm a highly compliant, accountable consultant.
Woohoo! That's exciting! We want him to do some of this, you know, social service people work.
In my experience, the people who wanted compliant consultants wanted the everything's fine here kind of report, no matter what you found. That was their idea of compliant, was compliant to how they wanted the report to be, not how what you really found.
Well, and what I'm really smiling about, is the analogy in what you're talking about, Justin, of what we expect when we talk about boards and organizations who are compliant. It is that they filed their taxes. And so if you know, you filed your 990, you did everything, you ticked all the boxes according to the way you were supposed to. If we judged each other that way, you know, you meet somebody at a cocktail party and you're not sure if you want to get to know them. And the first question you ask is, did you file your taxes this year?
I'm sorry, you can't have my taxes.
No, don't go there, please. Please don't go there. Please don't go there.
The reality of going there is there might be compliance, but no integrity. I mean, it's quite possible that,
yes,
you know, right, it complied with.
Right. We have lots of about your revenue system, but mine says you're supposed to file taxes even for completely illegal revenue.
Revenue
from sex trafficking, you were supposed to still put in an income tax return on.
I love you can have compliance without integrity. Sure and can. We frequently do. We frequently do. And compliance also. Leads to the desire to get around stuff. Yeah, we have to, but can we do it this way?
Can't we find a lawyer who'll give us a workaround and a loophole?
Right, right. And there's something, you know, integrity doesn't let you let yourself off the hook. There's something, this feels right and it feels easy.
I think it'll be very well received.
It's a lot of work, but so is any effort worth doing. It's a lot of work, but once you're on the board, feels like it would be simple. Maybe not easy, but since, I don't know. It's just, it feels right. And the other felt hard, I guess is what I'm saying. For trying to figure out every risk management possibility, every financial control, every felt like a slog. This feels like the work would be joyful.
Well, in that regard, what I was sort of hinting at or going toward is the idea of a sort of a litmus test of what has integrity. So if it's what has compliance, you just said you have to have a list of things you comply with. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, you know, if I comply with these 10 things, it doesn't tell you how to comply with the 11th thing. Unless the 11th thing is documented. You know, here's how you comply with this. And the comment, Justin, about, you know, integrity, you know, you can have compliance without integrity. If you have integrity, you know what to do with the 11th thing, or at least you know where to find the answer, or you want to find the answer. If you don't have integrity, then I don't need to do that, you know, or whatever. So I think it's a real important distinction that it also makes me think about when we've done our 990 in the past, we include the accomplishments in the 990. So the compliance part is we file the financial documentation. The integrity part is here's what all of that led to. Here's how we accomplished it. Here's what it was. So to me, that was a reflection of integrity in our talking about that and making that available publicly and et cetera.
Weirdly, this is actually bringing us back to binary because you can be mostly compliant. I filed 9 of the 10 things. I'm going to get around to the 10th thing. You can't really be mostly operating with integrity because one slip is enough that you don't have integrity.
Unless you have the integrity to say we screwed up.
Well,
and that comes back.
The intentional, no, we're not going to live up to our values on this situation. We're going to waive them and do something else entirely.
Right.
Takes away all your integrity to have done that. Anybody can make mistakes, anybody can omit something, but intentionally, willfully going against your values.
Right.
Means you don't have integrity.
So I'm going to bring something up on the screen here. If I can get it in. Yep, here we go. Okay. I want to sort of do a where we are in the conversation. This is the flow of catalytic thinking. We spent a lot of time talking about what we affectionately internally call the four whom's. All of the people whose lives will be impacted by the actions that we take, and listening through our own knowledge of what do they expect of us? What are the outcomes they want to see? What are the values that they want to see? We then reached last time and asked, okay, so if we are successful in meeting their expectations, what does that make possible for them, for our mission? And what we've talked about today are the conditions for success. what would it take to reach those expectations? The thing that I'm always smiling at with this framework is that actions just become clear, that we don't have to brainstorm all the actions, that actions become clear, and that I think we are at this point right now where we're really talking about taking action, which is starting to ask people, starting to pull this together in a way that we can then start to define a role of a board. Here's the kinds of questions, here's the kinds of things that, and the board will then have the opportunity and the freedom to design what the questions are. And if we're co-creating that, and all of us openly in these kinds of meetings, co-designing and co-creating that from the questions we have asked of our stakeholders, again, that feels like that rhythm, that cycle and that rhythm. I think we're ready to start. How do you guys feel? What is sparking for you? What is popping for you in this conversation?
What's popping is that this is a very natural conversation to have. The questions are plain English. They're understandable. They're not, did you form out fill out form 5563C079 on time? They're, what would you like? What are you hoping for from this activity? What are you hoping for from this organization? This is something that doesn't require a CPA or a law degree, or would intimidate people whose lived experience matters to an organization who perhaps don't have English as a first language. The further we go into this, the simpler our language seems to get. So you may have to explain what integrity means. It's a really, really good word, though, Justin. It's perfect, in my opinion, at this stage, at least. This is the one to go with. From there, we're having a normal conversation that you might have with anybody over coffee at a door.
Sorry, I'm looking down because I looked up the definitions of these words, comply and integrity, or compliance. And so comply is reactive by nature. It's in response to an outside requirement. Integrity is being honest to moral principles or being whole and undivided. Because compliance is reactive, it predisposes us to repeat past patterns. Because we, this is how it's done. So this is how you should do it to comply with how it's done, which is not the way you create social change, by recodifying past practices. Integrity, because it has that element not only of the values that you brought up, Angie, which you have to be true to an honest code, but this idea of being whole and undivided forces you to project forward.
Yeah.
It forces you to think about what would have integrity. So building the projects would not have integrity in this day and age. However, more creative ways of community development could create wholeness. It also speaks to the necessity of agreement. Mm. We do need to agree on not only the moral component or values component, but also the design component. But that's what really struck me as I was listening to all of you, and I was like, wow, compliance locks us in to past design, past performance, past constructs.
And what struck me in What you just said, Justin, is that integrity is about the people and about the future. And compliance is about the stuff and about the past. Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm. It also, you know, without getting into the best practice concept, but the best practice in my mind is a compliance thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is really exactly what you're saying, Justin. It's very limiting and doesn't encourage growth.
Yeah.
You know, it is, this is what it is. And so, as a matter of fact, I think it discourages growth.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know.
So this is how we do things.
This is how we do things. And from a governance standpoint, why are we wasting our time when we're doing what we do, how we do things? You know, why are we wasting our time on something else as opposed to we are a learning organization, whatever that means, and we continue to apply our integrity lens as we move forward. And yes, we comply with all these things. That's fine. But we're doing it with that lens on.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, sorry. Another part of that definition was to act in accordance. So again, the repetition, the compliance, the, and while I am in no way an advocate for Uber and Lyft and Airbnb for many reasons, they did not exist on compliance.
Yeah.
We can ask about the integrity piece, but certainly they shed. So that's what I think what happens when you shed both compliance and integrity, you get that. But it's very clear that they said compliance will not get us what we envision.
Yes.
As a possibility.
Yeah. So Justin, how are you feeling? And I don't mean to put you on the spot. Anybody can answer. How are you feeling about where we are right now? Are you, because I'm really thinking that we are ready to dive into conversations about taking action, about starting to ask these questions, starting to form this board. Am I missing something? Are you feeling sad? Just everybody talk to me.
No, I think so. Yes. Sorry, not a no. It's a yes. I think we are at that point of asking, you know, what does that line of inquiry look like?
Yeah.
That generates integrity. And I think you asked the question before about how would people know? So I think we really have to explore that side of the question, which is how is it that we know an other is acting with integrity? Because it's very easy to say how we act internally, but this is fundamentally a question.
Yes.
Well, it's not fundamentally, it's got two sides to it that we have to explore both sides, which is how does the person who's potentially in the role of a board member feel like they are acting with integrity? What do they need to be able to act with integrity to the organization and themselves?
Right.
But equally important is to that question, and Dimitri, you were starting to probe at it, which was, what does it take for someone to trust that integrity exists in an other entity or person?
Right. Right. Yeah. And you know, following the framework, we would naturally ask the exact question that you asked in the okay, if this is the actions, then what are the internal conditions? What do we need to know and have? What do board members need to know and have? Dimitri, Angie, how is this feeling to you?
It feels good, also knowing that, I don't know, flexible is the right word, but you know, there isn't anything we do that can't be made better or change, and that's the mantra here is that's the, you know, part of the value is that we are not locked in, and that we can and strive for learning and making it better and infusing that learning back into it. So I feel very good in terms of where we are in terms of discussion. I think we've covered a lot of ground and covered, a lot of what we're trying to, I think, to accomplish here.
Yeah, I agree. I think that where we are now, we're ready to move to the next stage. I feel very comfortable about that.
I do too. This really feels like you've reached the, the plateau, ready to go again.
We got there.
Let's level doesn't look as hard to get agreement on either. It looks like maybe from here, it's straightforward.
Yeah.
The answers may be a lot more obvious.
Yeah. I like that word straightforward. I kept saying easy and it didn't feel right, but it is straightforward.
Yeah, it's never easy.
And I really was, and have been for a year or more, as I've been thinking about this a lot. As Justin and I, you and I have been spent time last year talking to attorneys and compliance people, this feels right. So I'm going to say that we are ready to, next time we get together, start thinking about what it's going to take to actually make this happen, to start taking action. And we could have our new board by the end of the year, as we said we wanted to. And I have to share that I was a little nervous going in. This is going to be a lot, but I'm feeling confident.
It sounds to me like you're ready to start recruitment, in fact. You're going to be developing some of these questions with them, for them.
Yeah. Right. That's what it's feeling like. That's what it's feeling like. And so here's what it comes back to, and I just need to say this. In, I believe it was 2015, we began asking the question about recruiting new board members. And that question led to, well, what exactly are we recruiting them to? Which led to blowing all of this up and starting over again. And I love the fact that almost 4 years to the day, because it was in the spring, we are now finally talking about recruiting new board members.
Were you the kind of kid who always built those volcanoes in science class to blow everything up?
No, because they don't really blow anything up. Anything else that is standing out to you all from our conversation today?
Well, I know this is sometimes the natural pace of catalytic thinking, but I don't know if anyone else is feeling this, but there's a part of me that's like, well, duh. I mean, it's the most obvious, it took us 4 years to get to, like, we need people who can act with integrity. and I know that's not what this was, but I do think there's an element of that. It's like, well, when you make it about people and human, you will get down to values and integrity to those values. And then just intentionality as to whether or not the organizations, the structures we build, actually, to your point, Dimitri, allow us a lens to see those values and beliefs in action with intentionality. And that's all organizations are, just people acting together.
Right.
So.
What it really raises, Justin, is the fact that so many of our systems and structures do not focus on integrity and people.
Yeah, I was just going to say it took us 4 years, but it kind of runs counter to all the stuff, right? And all the best practice books about board governance and so on and so forth, and the tools that we use to communicate with each other at board meetings and so on. So it's obvious, but somehow not at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's four years to give us permission to say it. Not to, yeah. I mean, as you were talking about, as you were saying that, Angie, I'm like, yeah, that's what it took, was 4 years for us to be able to say, yes, this actually is what it's about. Look what we've done to get there.
Yeah.
It is counter. Yes, we know it sounds counter to everything, but when you actually walk through it, it's critical to everything.
Right. Yeah.
Dimitri? It is that long to shed all of the, this is how we do it. You know, this is how we do it, are very powerful. And you know, our whole sort of cultural infrastructure is built around those right now. And the ability to walk a different path confidently.
Yes.
And to walk a different path knowing that this is the best path to be walking, you need to be ready to shed everything else. And that's what 4 years took. Was the ability to look at every one of those things and to be able to honor them. Yes, thank you for helping us to be where we are, and move on to the next thing, which ultimately became the duh moment. We didn't think of this first off. You know, this seems so simple.
Apparently, even with a group of people that really wanted to change things up, to blow things up, who are good at questioning, and I always think that, and with such brilliant people when I'm at these Creating the Future sessions, we weren't as far along on the readiness continuum as we thought we were. We go back to one of our older pieces of work, and maybe it's taught us some patience about how we deal with other organizations that don't change as fast as we'd like them to.
What I am reflecting on the past 4 years is that we knew what we did not want to be. We knew what structures did not work. We knew what systems did not work. We needed to give ourselves the permission to explore the why, explore the context, and explore, absolutely. We spent a year talking about what our values look like in action. To ask, okay, we know what structures, we know what the current structures do and what they do badly and what they don't create. And we've been talking about integrity and people since the very beginning. You listen to the initial conversations that we had about this, about what does a structure make possible for whom, for the people. It took thinking it through slowly. I definitely appreciate the talking about the patience. Thinking it through slowly, involving lots of people in that conversation, to ask, okay, then what would a structure look like? And what would that structure be imbued with in order to do what we wanted to do? And in all of the quote-unquote restructuring things that I have witnessed, that take a year, they take 18 months, they take 2 years, usually they have a thing they're going to. We're not going to be this anymore, but we're going to go to a, you know, whether it's a holacracy, whether it's whatever, it's a thing they're going to. We took that 4 years to live in the inquiry. And I think that's really the thing that's standing out to me as the most joyful, that we gave ourselves the permission and the freedom to live inside the questions and to make those questions ultimately about a structure that will support people and moving towards the future. And that to me is just feels delicious and awesome.
That's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
So, go ahead, Jane.
I want to add that some of the earlier discussions that I either heard part of, was in, read up on, felt like they were pretty specific to creating the future. Today doesn't feel that way. Today feels much more like something we could be encouraging other organizations to do. Who aren't going to spend 4 years having
to figure it out. We'll figure it out.
This sounds like the stage at which a new document could be written for boards instead of the books we've all been relying on.
Not me.
I'm just, it's gonna have to be you a little bit.
I'm just calling not it right now.
Okay, Dimitri will write it. Yes. You'll have lots of time on the plane.
The guy who admittedly can't find words, we'll let him write it. I want to express deep gratitude to everybody who's in the room, and especially to all of the people who are not in the room today, but have been in the room over the past several years in this conversation. We wouldn't be where we are if we hadn't had this in an open way. And so I'm just really, really, really grateful. And we will not be meeting in June because apparently no one can make it in June. I think it's the first time we've been unanimous that everybody said, I'm sorry, but I can't make it in June either. We will do our best to get back together in July. I don't know if Dimitri and I will be on the road or not, but we'll start building this thing and start having the conversations about what will it take, who to involve, who to start recruiting. And I heard somebody wrote this great board recruitment book that we might be able to use. And we'll go from there. And just such gratitude to all of you. This is pretty awesome.
I think it should be recognized how well you and Dimitri have put up with the ever-changing cast of characters that have been in the room. It has a somewhat different composition, and most people would find that extremely frustrating.
It is one of the things that we are adamant about modeling.
I understand. I'm saying most people would be saying, we're not, it's taking all these years because we can't get the same people in the room. Whereas you instead have said, oh, good, fresh ideas, new voices.
Yeah. As a very quick 2 seconds, one of the key standout learnings in the work that we did in Nevada was it was important to them that when we did get to a planning session, and it was 2 solid days of planning session, that it be as inclusive as possible. And that meant that every one of the 200 employees at the Department of Education were invited, and that they could come at any point, leave at any point, and be there for as short as 15 minutes if that's all they could do. I've never facilitated something like that. It was the most exciting thing I've ever done. To ask the question, okay, if you're going to be that inclusive, what will it take? What are the conditions for success? And they're still talking about, if you listen to the podcast that we did with the NDE folks, it's on our homepage. The staff themselves are still talking about the fact that they've never experienced something like it. Going exactly to what you said, Jane, is what they've experienced is, I'm sorry, we can't because we got to close the doors. And what does it take to be inclusive, to mean it when you say inclusive?
And a company that probably had been espousing work-life balance actually proved they meant it.
It's pretty awesome.
Which is not always the case. We'll put it that
Thank
way.
You all.
Is that integrity you're talking about?
We're stopping now.
And on that note, bye everybody. I'm going to get back.
Bye everyone, and thank you. Much gratitude.
Goodbye.
Bye.